Welcome to Justice Radio on WMPG and WERU, your weekly space for bold conversations about justice reform here in Maine. I'm Cuba, your host, an advocate for equity and fairness in our legal system. Today, we're diving into a topic with immense implications, Maine's felony murder statute. My guest, Ted Berry, is on a mission it's a pretty clear mission to repeal this controversial law. Ted has researched how other states and even other countries have abolished felony murder. Notably, jurisdictions like Massachusetts have moved towards requiring actual malice for murder convictions, and other countries have deemed the rule unconstitutional and or abolished it entirely. Ted has also prepared a comprehensive, what I like to call, kitchen sink of legal arguments, case law, and data illustrating why this statute is not only unjust, but disproportionately affects racial minorities. We're going to unpack all of this and much more. So let's get started.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, Ted, thank you for joining us today. To set the stage, can you briefly explain to our listeners what the felony murder statute is and why it's so controversial?
Yes. So I feel like the simplest thing to do is to just read the felony murder statute that we have here in Maine. So our felony murder statute's listed under Maine Revised Statutes Annotated Title 17A, Section 202, which reads that a person is guilty of felony murder if acting alone or with one or more other persons in the commission of or an attempt to commit or immediate flight after committing or attempting to commit murder, robbery, burglary, kidnapping, arson, gross sexual assault, or escape, the person or another participant, in fact, causes the death of a human being, and the death is a reasonably foreseeable consequence of such commission, attempt, or flight. So it's a little confusing because there's a lot of conditional phrases there. But just to sort of give a historical perspective of like where did this statute come from? It was invented in England, and felony murder was historically abolished in England under the Homicide Act of 1957. And since then, Hawaii, Ohio, Michigan, and Kentucky have each repealed their felony murder statutes, where the felony murder rule, this has been abolished in every other common law country in the world except the United States. This includes Ireland repealing felony murder in 1964, Scotland, India, and Canada. The Supreme Court of Canada held that felony murder was unconstitutional as breaching the principles of fundamental justice. And that was in 1990. Again, the United States is the only country still using this antiquated doctrine. Just for listeners to understand, this is not a proposal to repeal the murder statute. There is a murder statute, and then there is a felony murder statute. Felony murder is essentially a unique homicide statute that we have here in Maine, because it's the only statute that does not require intent. It does not require proof of scienter, because intent is imputed by the underlying felony. And there have been a number of states that have actively worked to reform this. So for example, in 2007, in Commonwealth versus Timothy Brown, the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court repealed or required an actual malice requirement to their felony murder statute. And this requirement was made from the bench in order to convict someone for felony murder, which the Maine law court they've never engaged in such judicial activism related to Maine's felony murder statute. And our Maine state legislature has not discussed Maine's felony murder statute in over 30 years.
Mm. Well, could you tell us more about how that decision, the Timothy Brown case of 2017, how it's influenced your strategy here in Maine?
Well, it's been an inspiring case for not only myself, but I believe Boston University Law School. There's a professor by the name of Professor Caitlin Glass at Boston University Law School, who just created a website providing to provide states all over the country sort of a template on how to repeal Maine's how to repeal their respective felony murder statutes. So I think Timothy Brown's case was not only influential in Massachusetts, but it's been a more or less an, sort of an inspiring case. I feel that Massachusetts was very blessed to have Chief Justice Ralph Gantz sitting on the bench. I'd invite him to speak more on felony murder, but unfortunately he died during the pandemic. But there is a growing number of law professors all over the country that are beginning to question why we still have felony murder when so many other common law countries have repealed or abolished this doctrine. There's one organization called Minnesotans for Felony Murder Law Reform that have made their own website, and they've provided extensive research on felony murder law reforms all over the country. You can check out their website for racial disparate impact statistics on felony murder at fmlr.org/felony-murder-explained.
Thank you. Now, how might adopting similar reforms here in Maine address some of the systemic injustices that you've done a great job of highlighting in your research?
Well, so I think one prime example of just what happens if we do nothing, right? So New York has not reformed their felony murder statute yet. Johnny Hinnicapi received an $18 million settlement based on wrongful conviction for felony murder. Johnny Hinnicapi is a Hispanic minority man whose life was destroyed by the felony murder statute in New York. And it really begs the question of whether his Hispanic minority status contributed to why he was wrongfully convicted. And so, you know, that's an example of what freedom has a price. And I think federal judge John Woodcock once wrote that in one of his court orders in the past and Sullivan versus City of Augusta. Where freedom has a price. And we've seen with Johnny Hinnicapi in New York that the price for maintaining this antiquated felony murder rule is an $18 million settlement. Other states have also been actively working to repeal their respective felony murder statutes. So there's an organization in Maryland called the Maryland Alliance for Justice Reform that's actively trying to repeal Maryland's felony murder statute. California had an interesting take. California, instead of repealing it, they've narrowly construed it. And I encourage anyone that's interested in learning more about felony murder to review the Sean Khalif case related to felony murder, because that was another interesting case. But there's a variety of them. Looking back here in Maine, just looking at the headlines in Maine over the course of the last 6 or 7 years, we've seen a really alarming trend. Starting with this Arbery Armstrong case and State versus Arbery Armstrong.
That's where I was going, and Tyon Sharons and others that you kind of highlight in your work.
About
how, you know, Maine's felony murder statute disproportionately affects Black and Hispanic men, as seen in those cases. Could you share some of that with us? Elaborate on these racial disparities and their broader implications for justice reform in Maine.
Yes. Based on my review of just reviewing sentencings of various individuals collectively in the state of Maine related to specifically Maine's felony murder statute, it appears that there is a racial sentencing disparity related to who's able to serve their sentence in community. I mean, there are at least five men serving murder sentences. They're felony murder sentences in community right now.
Wow.
And
Wow.
none
By
of
in
them are black
community, you
men.
mean they are not in prison. They
They
are
are not in
not
prison.
behind bars.
No, they are not in
Okay.
prison. But none of them are black. If you are serving time for felony murder and you are African American, or if your skin color is black, you are in the Maine State Prison, period. And Arbery Armstrong's case in 2019, there was a man named Arbery Armstrong. He was acquitted of murder. This was a really interesting scenario. He was acquitted of murder. So he was found that, he didn't intentionally kill anybody. And yet, he was still convicted of felony murder and robbery. And before Arbery Armstrong's trial, two other men, they'd pled guilty to the murder. And Arbery Armstrong did not plead guilty to murder. And he was, in fact, acquitted of murder. And he was given a double maximum sentence for a single offense.
What does that look like? A double maximum sentence.
So the maximum is 30 years. So a double maximum would be somewhere around 60.
Wow.
But the manner in which he was sentenced, he was sentenced in violation of double jeopardy. And he was represented by Maine's attorney Scott Hess out of Augusta. And it doesn't appear that his case was that the argument of double jeopardy was preserved. But regardless of that, it looks like under the obvious error standard, Arbery Armstrong appealed to the Maine Law Court, and the Maine Law Court found that the Maine Attorney General's office, Maine Attorney, Assistant Attorney General Lee Ann Robin, had in fact violated Maine's double jeopardy clause in violation of the Maine Constitution related to a essentially a duplicative sentence against this African American man. And this isn't necessarily the only case in which we have seen this both thumbs on the scale scenario against an African against a man whose skin color is black. There's
Okay.
another case, this Tyron Shuren case. Tyron Shuren is another African American man, and with his case, this was a very alarming sort of scenario where we as individuals, we have a Fifth Amendment right to be free from self-incrimination. We should not have to prove our innocence. And Tyon did that. He waived. Well, he was charged with murder and felony murder, and he waived his Fifth Amendment rights and testified against himself at trial in order to be acquitted of felony murder. And I think it's a prime example of prosecutorial unconscious or intentional racial bias in yet another felony murder criminal prosecution against yet another man whose skin color is black. And in that case, that was prosecuted by Assistant Attorney General Suzanne Russell. And I've recently heard stories of Maine's felony murder statute being used to specifically deport Hispanic and black men from Maine, where this is used as an immigration racial segregationist practice in Maine. And if Kentucky can repeal felony murder, Maine should as well. We should adopt the logic and wisdom of former Mass SJC Chief Justice Ralph Gantz, provided in Timothy Brown back in 2007. And I think that's I think it's compelling. Should
Well,
anyone be I mean here's at the end of the day, should anyone be convicted of a should be should anyone be branded a convicted felon without the court being required to prove intent, without having to require proof of scienter? Should there be a due process right to have each element of the crime proved beyond a reasonable doubt?
you're listening to Justice Radio on WMPG and WERU with me, Cuba, and my guest, Ted Berry, as we discuss repealing Maine's felony murder statute and its critical role in advancing justice reform. Stay tuned. So in this case, you're saying, should anyone be branded a murderer without proving that they in fact committed a murder?
And so that was one of the arguments with Maine School of Law's visiting professor, Dr. Pye. He made a statement in support of repealing Maine's felony murder statute. And he listed a few reasons of, like, why do we still have this? And like, who does this help? Who actually benefits from this? Like what numbers are trying to be skewed as the product of keeping Maine's felony murder statute? And one of his arguments was that by keeping Maine's felony murder statute on the books, it overinflates our homicide statistics to legitimize the resources that we spend in Maine's homicide unit. And for me, I believe in classification. Classifying individuals appropriately for what they may have done. If you've committed a bank robbery, then you and you've been found guilty, you should be a robber. But if you didn't kill anybody, you shouldn't be branded a murderer. Or in this instance, a felony murderer. I think the felony murder statute is too broad. It needs to be repealed, and I hope listeners are awakened by this.
Well, I'm glad you said that. We do have our work cut out for us. Me being an advocate, you know, and an activist around criminal justice, bringing that to our state, given the state of what role, and that you know, brings me to an interesting question. What role do you think public perception and advocacy play in dismantling such a discriminatory practice? How do you see us coming to the fight?
We need to really take a serious look at each of our homicide statutes. We need homicide statute reform. We need to keep murder on the books, keep manslaughter on the books. But this felony murder statute, it's unique, because with all the other homicide statutes that are on the books under MRSA Title 17A, they all require some degree of proof of scienter or a mens rea requirement. You either have to prove intent, knowledge, recklessness, or negligence. At minimum, criminal negligent homicide. At minimum. But with this felony murder, you don't even have to kill anybody. Not even negligently. And there are a variety of sets of factors, sets of situations, variables, in which you could still be convicted of felony murder. You could still be deemed a murderer without ever having killed anyone. And I think it sheds light on these five individuals who have been convicted of felony murder, but they're serving their sentences in community. That it's just you know, there must be someone within the system that sees, all right, they've been branded as a murderer, but one of the questions is, like, are they really a danger to the public? So someone in the system has made this finding that at least five murderers, or per se murderers, are not inherently dangerous and can just serve their felony murder sentences in community. And I don't think it's fair that it looks like a brown paper bag test in terms of how you get sentenced in terms of felony murder. And it seems like there is a real correlation to the darker your skin color is, the worse your sentence is going to be. The longer you're going to be segregated, really racially segregated from our communities here in Maine. And I think it's appalling, and I think it violates equal protection.
Well, Ted, your proposal also cites international trends, noting that countries like Canada and England have abolished the felony murder rule. How does the United States, and specifically Maine, compare on this issue? And what lessons can we learn from these international examples?
Well, I mean, for me, it's very troubling to understand that under the same set of facts, if they occurred in Canada, if they occurred further north than Maine, you wouldn't be deemed a murderer. And then under the same set of facts, in Massachusetts, if you headed south of Maine, reviewing Commonwealth versus Timothy Brown, if they can't prove actual malice, they cannot prove a malice requirement, still they're not going to be branded a murderer. But they still would be here in Maine.
So what
I
are
think
the
a lot of it's
barriers?
just ignorance.
Okay. Do you the barriers, do you foresee any in introducing similar reforms here? And how do you plan to overcome what you might face?
Well, so I've approached a number of state reps and state senators to repeal Maine's felony murder statute. And I've received a number of yeses to sponsor and support a bill. And then all of a sudden, someone silences them. And it's been a pattern over the last 2 years. So I'll present this information to a state rep or a state senator, and they'll be happy to sponsor a bill to repeal Maine's felony murder statute. And then some political force will tell them no. And then all of a sudden they get real quiet. And so I don't know how to describe it, but I would describe it as legislative censorship. There's some degree of legislative political censorship related to this specific issue on why we aren't able to repeal Maine's felony murder statute, when it seems like it's pretty common sense. The inventors of this repealed this in the 1950s. All other common law countries have followed suit many decades ago, before I was ever even born, right? And yet here in Maine, I think a lot of it's just education. We need to really educate the public related to the inherent racial disparate impact on sentencing and charge disparities related to what in the world is going on with these felony murder issues.
Now, Ted, one of the most compelling aspects of your proposal for me is your focus on legislative allies. You were just speaking a moment ago about how sometimes you'll get started around and generate some interest, and then you'd almost hit a wall where you are stonewalled around the discussion. You've mentioned efforts to find a sponsor for the bill. Can you tell me what that process looks like, and how can listeners support this initiative?
Well, one thing that listeners can do is they can reach out to their respective state reps and state senators and encourage them to put in either a placeholder bill or to sponsor a bill to repeal Maine's felony murder statute, because it's inherently unfair and it's inherently unconstitutional to allow any felony statute that doesn't require proof of scienter. Every felony statute should require some mens rea element. Does that make sense?
Yes, but for our listeners, can you explain scienter and terms like mens rea?
So scienter is just knowledge. It's a knowledge requirement. And same thing with mens rea. Mens rea is the mental intent to commit an act. It's just a Latin phrase that means to provide a mental intent to commit a criminal act. And this isn't just something at the state level. We need to repeal 18 U.S.C. section 1111, related to the federal felony murder statute. So I encourage listeners to write to their congressmen, write to their U.S. senators, and encourage them to not only repeal Maine's felony murder statute under MRSA Title 17A, Section 202, but to also repeal 18 U.S.C. Section 1111.
Well, before we wrap up, I'd love for you to share your vision for a post-felony murder Maine. Okay, how do you think repealing this law could transform our justice system and the lives of those it has impacted?
We need to take a fine look at our homicide statutes. Other states have more homicide statutes than we have in Maine. We could have more homicide statutes. I'm not opposed to having additional homicide statutes, but I am opposed to having homicide statutes that don't require at least a negligence standard, like at least some degree of either proving malice or some type of mental mens rea or scienter in order to criminally convict and incarcerate a human being for the killing of another human being. Because accidents happen. People commit suicide. People engage. People have accidents. People die. We had a lot of people die from COVID. People have underlying health issues. People have prescription drug. There are prescription drug side effects that may cause death. There's a variety of scenarios which can cause someone to die that may not actually be foreseeable. But regardless of that, it's that's more or less my vision. Like I don't want to see people incarcerated for decades when they didn't kill anybody and they're deemed a murderer. I think the label of murderer should be exclusive to people that actually kill another human being.
Well, Justice Radio invites you to join the movement to repeal Maine's felony murder statute. Connect with your legislators, attend hearings, and advocate for change. Together, we can make a difference. Next week, join us for another episode of Justice Radio as we dive into restorative justice practices with a leader transforming how we think about accountability. A big thank you to Ted Berry for joining us today and to Samuel James for his gift of music that opens and closes each episode. Thank you for listening to Justice Radio. Together, we're building a more just and equitable Maine. See you next week.